It's the great Dante read-through.
It's the great Dante read-through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading Hellfire, found in Prague's 1526 to 1531.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, Edie.
And hello, irregulars, and welcome back to the Great Dante Read-Through. I don't know why I said it like that.
I don't know. It felt nice.
Sound like a housewife on barbiturates. Welcome back to the Great Dante Read-Through. Okay.
Sit back and relax.
Relax. Enjoy the ride. Yes. Don't question authority. who wrote it, who drew it, etc.
Okay, Hellfire was written by Robbie Morrison. It was drawn by Simon Fraser, which is me, and it was colored by Gary Caldwell, which is him over there in Paisley.
Yes, in Paisley.
And it was lettered by Annie Parkhouse.
Annie Parkhouse. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed the romp that was deadlier than the mail, because we are in for it with this story. I hope you all enjoyed the laughs and the big giant lady butts, because we are not there anymore. Honestly, trigger warning.
Yeah.
There is really graphic torture in this one. So take care when listening.
Yes.
If that's something, grisly torture, because we're going to have to talk about it. So I will also give a little heads up when we get there. But it really gets into it. So
it does.
We open on a dilapidated mansion with a lone sex worker in a sexy pink crop top and sort of like harem pants and a cape. Points for the cape, by the way, Simon.
Thank you.
Wandering up the stairs to her job for the evening, which is unfortunately for her, the Lord Protector, a.k.a. Constantine.
Yeah.
This part in the beginning reminds me of Hell House.
It's exactly what it is. It's the same stairway.
You just straight up draw the same stairway
from
Hell House.
I didn't do the same stairway, but I did very similar. I mean, I did that, a few months earlier, so it was like it was in my mind.
By the way, if you haven't read Simon's Hell House...
Good luck finding it.
Oh my God, you should find it though and read it. It's so good, y'all. I love Hell House.
Okay.
I love it. It's so twisted and weird and gross and fun. I love it so much.
It definitely was.
I really love it.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep.
Hell House. Okay. Yep. So we are treated to a creepy sex scene that manages to be entirely unsexy.
Yep.
And I like my share of in peril sort of sex scenes, but this one is just, ugh.
Yeah.
And all the sex scenes in this story are just brutal and like not satisfying.
No.
There are a number of them and none of them are good. So basically Constantine seems to beat the sex worker a fair amount. Am I right? She looks bruised
rough.
And the room looks roughed up.
Yeah,
I'm guessing she agreed to this, right? Just the way she relates to him. I'm guessing that this was part of the deal. And we learn way more about Constantine's sex habits than I ever needed to know. Though it does seem fitting that he discloses that he never has orgasms, because he's a total control freak. So
fair.
Does track. But
yeah, does.
I don't know if I needed to know that about Constantine.
I think that's all we really know about him at this stage, apart from the fact he's a giant douche, is that he doesn't get off and he's a freak and sadist.
Yeah.
We don't really know a lot about him.
No.
He doesn't really have an internal life. He's basically been portrayed as a monster of the whole time.
I think very few of the Romanov children have internal lives. I don't know if they were allowed to.
I mean...
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Lulu kinda.
Lulu has a complex life.
But I mean, I would argue that they're all stunted. You know what I mean? And I think the men get it worse than the women, because there's more expectation on them in this sort of patriarchal setup.
Probably.
You know? We're then, let's see. We turn from this scene, thank God, to Dante visiting Jocasta in a convent. He is shaking her down for information, as she used to run that whole spy network, remember? And Dante's guessing that she's still got some little birds feeding her info. Though we don't know what Dante's questions are, just that he's not here in his official capacity as the sword of the Tsar, he says. Yeah. No, we cut back to creepy sex times, where Constantine is monologuing to the sex worker about how Dante murdered him and his remains were pulled from the wreckage of the Potemkin by the Raven Corps, who put him in an incubator and basically regrew and healed himself with his crest. Hmm. So take note, if you want to kill a Romanov kid, like, hit them in the crest.
Yeah. I mean, it's never quite established how to kill Romanovs. I mean, a bunch of them are killed, but it seems almost casual.
I'm going to say aim for the crest.
Okay.
Aim for the crest, then the head.
Maybe that's it.
Double tap to be sure.
Burn the corpse to be certain.
Uh-huh.
Like vampires.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, we get a little backstory from Constantine about his mom and Dmitry Romanov and the Tsar back in the old days. Mm-hmm. And Constantine keeps talking about how the Tsar should be his father, which is so weird because that would not be you. Which I guess is what his fantasy is.
Creepy.
I don't think he likes himself very much.
I think he despises himself.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't want to be him either. especially because he predictably zap kills the innocent sex worker. Yep. I guess that's how he finishes these days.
I guess that's the only way he can climb out.
Uh-huh. Back at the convent, Dante and Jocasta wrap up their tete-a-tete, but we don't know what's been said. Dante apologizes for all Jocasta's dead children. Yeah. He's clearly got a complicated relationship with this family, as they've all been psychopaths, like, from the word go, but, like, they're also his siblings.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Certainly. Certainly, I think the relationship with Jocasta is very interesting, because she seems to actually like him, which is, she has no reason to do.
No.
She just seems to, like, take him as he is, rather than, like, some of his actions, which are,
I think
in her context, horrible.
Well, first of all, he's a child, right, of this family that wasn't someone that was made by, like, her brother euphemistically taking sexual advantage of her.
It's never clear how that
happened. Let's just say that we hope that she agreed to it.
There's ambivalence.
But basically, he's a kid of the family who isn't burdened with that for her.
Right.
Coming in. And so, you know, she just kind of gets to enjoy him for his own sake.
It's not like she's like Dimitri's wife or anything.
No. No.
It's not that relationship. So I suppose she's not burdened with that.
Nope.
There's no betrayal involved in the adultery. He was just...
And I think Dante reminds her of the old days. Back when the Tsar was sort of... like a fun guy.
You reckon?
He was fun when he was young.
That's true.
He wasn't a jerk. And Dmitry wasn't a jerk either. He was a little incel-y, but he was all right. And it was that whole screwed up, like, thing that we saw. And that was at the hunting party we saw those flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know, it got all twisted, as these things do.
It did.
So, you know, families were murdered. People got angry. It, you know, it became a whole thing. Because the Tsar was a ward of Dimitri's father, right? Yeah, the Tsar was a ward, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he was a ward.
No, they were both, it wasn't Dimitri's father.
Oh, they were both wards. That's right, they were.
The scions of various clans.
It was like a stalemate. Yeah, that's right.
Oleg the Horrible, whatever.
So I mean, they kind of only had each other, and they were kind of fun and kidding around back in the day. So I think Dante might remind her of that simpler time as well.
Possibly. Sounds like a good analysis.
I'm going with that. So he, Dante tells Jocasta that he's off to bring in Lulu dead or alive, which really means dead because I can't imagine Lulu would allow herself to be captured alive. You know, if anyone has like a cyanide tooth, it's Lulu. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets to control Lulu. You know what I'm saying?
No.
She's top all the way. He does mention to Jocasta that he's doing this with the Lord Protector. And of course, Jocasta knows who that really is. So interesting. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we get a panel of Constantine smiling over the burning body of the sex worker. And like, did we need to see that? Like, I feel like the other scene was enough. I don't feel like we need to see this. I feel like this is overkill. I don't like it. We know Constantine is a sick puppy. We don't need more proof. I don't think we need that. Anyway.
Fair.
Yeah, I'm coming out against those two panels.
Okay.
Okay. And then the beautiful Lulu page. Can we just take in the beautiful Lulu page? Like, if you're not actually reading along with us, like pause and go find the beautiful Lulu page from Hellfire, because it is something to see. This is just gorgeous. I love it so much. Like, Lulu is looking like some sort of, I don't know, she looks like Art Deco to me for some reason, like an Art Deco illustration.
Somewhere between Deco and Nouveau, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe it's the flapper bob is leading me there. There's kind of a garland behind her, and she's got her, I don't know, there's something about it that really reads those periods to me. And her sex mates are all dressing her. Though I'm really curious as to how the body hugging, mostly not there lace garment is like even put on. I don't even know how you put that on. It feels like it should be sprayed on, like the latex she wore in Cadre Infernale. It's like spray lace.
Maybe.
But my God, does she look amazing, Simon? Oh my God. She's never looked better.
That's why she's so popular.
This page is so rad. Do you still have it or did you sell it?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Oh my God.
I can't imagine someone wouldn't have bought it if it was available.
That's what I thought when I saw it. That's why that was my question.
We'll find out because we're going to do an assessment.
We're going to do an assessment of original Dante artwork. So those of you who might be at Lawless or just in the general UK area and can make it to Bristol, We are going to be looking through Dante original art, and I don't know how we're going to put that up for people to take advantage of. But
no, I don't know. I mean, we're going to catalog it, work out what we've got, bag it up, price it, stick it in a box.
I mean, we're going to bring some with us, but I mean, I think also we're just going to like have a catalog of all the pages we have in case somebody wants to approach us and say, do you have X page? We will know if we have X page.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. We don't really know at the moment because we're completely disorganized.
So even if you can't come to Lawless, if you can get to the like Bristol area, we may be able to give you original artwork.
Yeah, because the problem I have right now with artwork, sending original artwork to the UK from the US is the absolutely horrific prices.
It is so expensive
sending anything to the UK. So I haven't done it for a long time.
Yeah.
Unless the artwork's worth an awful lot of money, it's like a cover or something, it's maybe worth doing. But I haven't sent anything. If I've screwed up a commission for you, that's largely because I'm really fact off with the postal system.
Yeah, it's not great.
We'll go to Lawless and I'll bring.
We'll bring stuff.
I'm trying to keep track of all the commissions which are pending. Yeah. I've got to bring with me to Lawless.
That's a little shopkeeping in the middle here, but we'll talk about that.
Anyway,
beautiful Lulu page. Okay. Mm-hmm. This scene is narrated by an excerpt from the book Terror of the Cadre Infernale by Bargo Partridge.
Bargo Partridge. One of the Partridge
family. That's a name. Mm-hmm. And we basically just get information about Lulu taking over the cadre, which we know, and its illustrious membership of like powerful and notable people. Mm-hmm. And then we get this detail on the 13 lovers Lulu had driven insane before she turned 21.
Okay.
Can we just get like a 13 lovers of Lulu spinoff? Like, I guess she'd be underage for some of it, but like that could just be spoken about and not seen or something.
They might be underage too. That's the thing.
You don't want to be drawing underage people having sex. It's not a good thing.
You could just refer to it though.
This is what I'm saying. Like, she's reading a diary or something.
Who said they had sex? Maybe she drove them mad without
any intercourse whatsoever. She just drove them mad just by like being in their presence. I believe just it.
Like being a really, really difficult girlfriend.
I think the 13 Lovers of Lulu is a great title. Mm-hmm. And I think we should have it.
Okay. Pitch it to Robbie.
I will. So Lulu tells us she's suiting up for an act of terror. She's even wearing her red lens terror glasses.
Okay.
You know, that's how you know she means business. So cut to the Abramovich cruise ship, which is that named after the famous performance artist?
No, it's named after Roman Abramovich.
Abramovich is the artist.
Maybe.
Okay. It's named after who?
Roman Abramovich, who's a famous dissident against Vladimir Putin, who was, I think, killed. Okay, this is Simon inserting myself at a later date to point out that Roman Abramovich is in fact a Russian oligarch and former owner of Chelsea Football Club. I am, of course, thinking of Alex Navalny, who had just died when we were recording this. So, my correction. Sorry about that. Back to the program.
So anyway, the cruise ship starts to drift off course, which the pilot notices, and to his horror is confirmed by his co-pilot, who admits he set the ship for a collision course with the center of St. Petersburg. And the co-pilot rips open his shirt and shouts for the glory of the Romanovs before a bunch of Lulu's little killer demons swarm out of his chest a la Alien.
We get more. We get more of the aliens.
So many, better. And we cut to the passenger area of the cruise ship to see a really unlucky flight attendant trying to get a number of passengers to sit down.
Can I just say the thing that really upsets me, that looking at this page, like that panel with all those chairs, I'm like, damn it, that would have been a pain in the ass to draw. And I did a decent job of it. Like, I would have hated that. I would have hated drawing all those chairs. Anyway, sorry.
You're just like retroactively feeling sad for yourself?
I am. Because a lot of this artwork I haven't actually looked at for an awful long time. I'm going, oh, that's quite good. That's actually quite well done. I mean, I was spending a lot of time in airplanes at this point, so I had a good perspective on drawing the interiors of aircraft.
Well, there you are. Yeah. I'm sorry about the chairs, dear.
Yeah.
So the unlucky flight attendant is telling the passengers to sit down, but they're all following the co-pilot's lead and ripping open their shirts while swarms burst forth. Mm-hmm. The opening of the shirts is basically just to be creepy, right? Because if they can bust through a chest, they can bust through some clothing.
Probably.
But I like it. It has kind of an X-Files kind of feel, like they're slowly unbuttoning the shirts and pulling it open. You know, it's creepy. So the ship heads towards St. Petersburg, where the Imperial Space Egg floats above the city. And Dante and Elena are observing this from the Wiener ship, aka Strike Hawk. And Dante is horrified seeing the people inside of the ship as they pass by the windows on the side of the ship. He sees people banging on the windows to get out as the swarm sort of descends on them. Mm-hmm. And Dante decides this is the time for him to be a hero and volunteers to try and board the ship and take the controls to steer it away from downtown.
Yep.
Just then, the Tsar breaks through on comms to tell Dante to stand down. Was he listening to all of this? Like, is he like live as he's debating this with Elena? The Tsar doesn't want to risk setting the swarm loose in the city and tells Dante that they need to destroy the ship before it reaches the more populated downtown area. And emo Dante makes a sad face, but complies.
Yep.
This is one of those moments where I'm in agreement with the Tsar again. It's troubling.
All right,
it's a troubling moment, but he's right. He's right.
I'm telling you.
We can make shirts with the Sharko. The Tsar was right.
The Tsar was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We see the giant ship headed towards the ground on fire and then shots of the burning wreckage after it's impacted, which Lulu watches on a video screen from her boudoir. And she tells us that murder is an aphrodisiac.
Apparently for
her. As two naked handmaidens start to undress what little clothing she has on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the Hellfire Club logo is the Maserati logo. Anyway.
Oh, really? Where are you seeing that?
It's a little sort of trident.
Oh, there's a little all have the trident like tattoos on them and stuff.
I'm thinking, oh right, it's the Maserati logo.
I didn't
think of that at the time.
Then we smash cut from what is likely some interesting sex. This is like the only sex scene. It's still sad, but like I'm curious as to like how Lulu has sex. I'm curious about it. It's sad. It's still not sexy, but I'm curious about it.
Okay.
So
makes sense.
Back to the Abramovich crash site, and who is there but Jenna, with her hair blowing sadly in the wind.
Indeed.
Which also, the wind also fans the flames of the mass murder crash site.
Yes.
And Dante is pretty upset. He's very emo Dante with Jenna, saying that if he tried to save the ship and gone down with it, this would be no great loss. Mm-hmm. And the Tsar scolds Jenna for, like, giving a crap about Dante, because it isn't going to last, which makes me think that he's got something like sinister planned for Dante, maybe?
It does seem that there's is built in from both ends.
Because this is just, otherwise it's just randomly fatherly advice or something, which doesn't seem in character for the Tsar, so I feel like he's saying it isn't going to last.
I'm sure he cares. I'm sure he cares, but it probably suits his interest for her to know that he's doing.
I think he's doing. I don't think it's.
He's playing head games with everybody.
Yeah. I mean, remember, this guy didn't even remember her birthday. I keep coming back to that. He didn't even know what her birthday was. He like set up that whole weird thing on her birthday that she had to do many moons ago. So we cut to a nice looking mansion. And guess who's there and still alive? Who is it, Simon?
Luther Arkwright.
It is Captain Luther Emmanuel.
Emmanuel. Oops, sorry. My mistake.
We thought he was dead.
Yeah, we did.
Or I at least thought he was dead. You probably remember that he wasn't when he got shot.
I did remember that. He has lots of lovely bookshelves.
Mm-hmm. And Captain Jackass is still with us and sporting an intense neck scar from his duel with the Huntsman. So here's my question. The Huntsman changes its ammo to kill whomever it's pointed at.
Right.
Right? But apparently it doesn't always kill its target.
Yes, apparently. Apparently it's fallible.
Seems like a short-sighted design. It's like so sophisticated, it can morph its ammo to kill whatever it's aimed at, but it also misses.
But later on, we see another scene where Dante threatens to injure somebody with
it's
Huntsman.
Coming up. So, it's coming up.
So there is the implication that there is control.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I mean,
fallibility.
We've seen the Huntsman take down some serious adversaries, but like it couldn't handle Captain Jackass. He was pointing it at Captain Jackass.
Yes.
He was shooting to kill.
He was.
So I don't know what's going on there. Anyway, Dante shows up and starts beating the captain for information.
Yes.
So I guess Luther's location is the intel he got from Jocasta earlier.
Right.
So Dante explains that when he realized Captain was involved with the terrorist attack on the Abramovich, it was to bend the minds of the security officers checking in the passengers so that they could sneak in with Lulu's beasts inside of them.
Yep.
Also, like, where were they before they burst through the chests? Like, were they like super teeny tiny so they didn't harm the hosts? Because they couldn't be that big sitting in there. They would have had to get bigger, right?
Maybe.
Because they couldn't be that big sitting in there, or the people would die.
She generates them from seemingly nowhere, so they're tiny and then they grow big.
Yeah,
so
I'm thinking they're tiny.
They acquire mass from somewhere.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, anyhow, the captain gets inside Dante's head and I think gets him to throw himself out a window.
No.
Yeah.
No, he just turns around and the guy does actually beat him up.
No, I think he says, look at this line here.
Then he throws him out a window.
And he says,
I don't know if he throws himself.
Talks
out.
About his thoughts. Yeah, such wicked thoughts. And then he goes out the window.
Dante is suddenly thrown out the window.
I feel like he throws himself out the window. Anyway.
Don't know.
Who knows?
Anyway. Dante gets defenestrated
again. I don't think it takes much manipulation, to be honest. Like, Dante will jump out the window at a drop of a hat.
True.
Like, it's like his whole life is jumping out windows. So he lands at the feet of our Lord Protector, who blasts Captain Jackass a few non-lethal times before we cut to him chained up and naked inside the torture room of the Space Egg.
Yep, as you do, have a torture room.
Yes, you would think. Probably several, if we're thinking of the Tsar here. Probably a torture suite of rooms.
Torture floor.
Torture wing. The torture wing. Take him to the torture wing. Captain has a fun-looking helmet on that blocks his psionic power. And the Lord Protector questions him as Dante looks on. And Dante is concerned the Protector will kill him. And the Lord Protector is like, he's colluding with a terrorist. And together they help kill a bunch of people while you watched. Why are you so worried about him?
Yeah.
Which, like, I can't really argue with that. Am I now agreeing with frickin' Constantine?
Who's torturing a man to death.
This is very uncomfortable. Mm. I mean, I was really thinking about this. I mean, I don't believe in torture. But, like, also I do not feel bad for this guy, you know?
I
don't feel bad for him. He's
a scumbag.
But, you know, there's human decency, I guess. And this is not it.
No,
at the end of the day, there's human decency.
No, there's not much humanity going on here.
No. The Lord Protector wants Captain to give up all he knows about Lulu and the cadre in Infernale. And the Captain is obstinate. So Lord Protector reaches down. And here we go. We're getting into the torture part. So just a warning. He reaches down and grabs his genitals and zaps them. And then sends Dante from the room to throw up. I'm seeing your eyes big time in these reaction shots from Dante. There are moments where I see reaction shots, especially from Dante, but sometimes other characters too, where I go, that is Simon looking into a mirror and drawing his eyes.
Hello. Nobody else's were available.
I just know your eyes really well by this point. So like I see them and I go, oh, hey.
Hi.
It's always a fun little moment.
It's me. They're all me.
We cut to the sun setting over the Space Egg and then back to the torture room where the Lord Protector has his helmet off and is jabbering with the Tsar in front of the captain's naked corpse still strung up. And we're about to get, again, super graphic here. He's got a chunk missing from the side of him like an animal took a huge bite out of his side.
Yep.
He's also got a metal skewer in his eye, and his jaw looks broken, and there are teeth missing.
Yep.
But according to Constantine, he gave up the intel on Lulu and the cadre embarrassingly early into the torture.
So,
I ask you, I put this to you. One of two things is happening here. Either Constantine gets a lot done quickly, or he got his information and continued torturing him before killing him.
Yes.
That's what you think it is? Yes. Option two?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Constantine was just doing it for funsies.
And the Tsar is like really unfazed by this. See, this is when I'm like, the Tsar is not always right. This is terrible. He's just like, ugh. He's way too comfortable with this defiled corpse. It makes me very nervous. So for the love of God, can we cut to something else? Yes, thank you. We cut to Edinburgh, which apparently looks exactly the same in 2674 as it does today.
Slightly. Okay. Admission about this page.
Ooh, here we go.
It was my mother's birthday and I didn't have anything for her. So I thought, I'm kind of a splash page of Edinburgh. So I did a splash page of Edinburgh and I organized it in such a way that it was a nice image by itself and then gave it to her for her birthday. And it also was printed here. So yeah, it's 2-for-1. It's a 2-for. It's not architecturally accurate. The plan of the city I have budged substantially to make certain buildings line up and make the composition pretty. But yeah, it's Edinburgh. I mean, anyone who lives in Edinburgh will go, yeah, that's Edinburgh.
It's Edinburgh.
Clearly.
Yeah. Well, I love it.
It's not bad.
I think it's some great city work from you.
It's all right. Considering it's like the first like realistic, it's the first time I've actually drawn a real city.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, it looks mostly the same as it does today, only that King Arthur's seat has been renamed Vladimir's seat, but otherwise the same.
There's a giant statue of the Tsar sitting there at the end of the Royal Mile.
Oh my God, is that what that is?
Yeah. That doesn't exist in real life.
Wait a minute.
There is no statue of Vladimir the Conqueror.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even see that. Yeah. Okay, if you're looking at the page, it is the Edinburgh Castle.
Just to the right of the Esplanade.
Just to the right of that, there are a couple of ships floating in the sky, three ships floating in the sky in the very far off distance. And then there's a little like man standing on top of a plinth. Well, and that's
giant,
the Tsar.
Giant man.
Well, he's little in the page, yeah, but he's big in quote, real life.
My mother has not noticed that part.
Aware of it. She didn't go through it with a magnifying glass. So Dante and Elena head to Old Town to find where Lulu and the cadre are holed up.
Mm-hmm.
So the crest changes Dante's eyeball to be the captain's eyeball somehow to get them in, which is like pretty wild.
That is pretty wild.
I mean, that's pretty interesting.
Pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah. And then Dante and Elena punch their way through the entrance after they've been admitted. Mm-hmm. And we cut to the space egg where the Tsar is having a Lulu war council. And I'm sure Lulu would be happy she warrants this kind of planning, you know? They've got like a little image of her floating over the table and sort of like a little hologram. And they're all talking about Lulu. I just feel like she would love to know that this happened.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm almost sad for her. She doesn't know this happened.
Comforting to know you're hated and feared.
Yes. So the Tsar monologues that the cadre has seized vaults beneath the streets in Edinburgh to train and recruit Lulu's terrorist army.
Yeah.
But not to worry, the Tsar has quietly built up his troops around the city, saying no one gets in or out without them knowing it, and also that they hid their capture of Captain Luther, though, like, he and Dante were way noisy with that capture, like broken windows, sonic blasts into the walls. Like, I don't know how they hid that, but fine. And Arcady is talking to the cadre through coded channels. The captain revealed, I guess, to get intel on the troops and their plans.
Right.
Something.
Something like that.
Okay. Once Dante confirms Lulu's location, apparently the Tsar plans to send in all the military might he's amassed to take her out.
Okay.
All right. We cut to our final sad sex scenes of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
First, Lulu and her handmaidens. One who makes the mistake of asking Lulu to come back to bed. And Lulu gives her a board now, a la Evil Willow on Buffy, and sends her swarm to eat the naked lady's head while the other handmaiden watches, who I'm assuming is next.
Who knows?
Who knows the wiles of Lulu?
Yes.
This is horrible.
It's horrible.
None of these
people are nice. And sex workers are taking the brunt of it.
Ugh. Well, these aren't even sex workers, I think. These are, I think, just like recruits in her like weird little sex army.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think they're recruits. Because I think we saw them undressing her before and they had the tattoo on the shoulder,
okay.
I think.
Yeah. All right.
Seemed
like a good job at the time.
And then we get one of the wonderful Simon Fraser overhead sex orgy shots. Lots of tiny figures doing sex stuff.
And violent stuff.
Except these are also fighting, yes.
Fighting and violently fucking.
Yes, because the... Oh my goodness. Dropped an F-bomb. Because the... I think we've said it before, but anyway.
Take it back.
If your children were listening along with you, apologies. Because the crest narrates the scene by explaining that these troops combine the sexy times with the fighty trainee. Training to immerse Lulu's agents in sex and violence, blurring the lines between the two to get the best out of them.
Yeah, if you're reading this with your kids, you should really consider your choices.
Hellfire's not the one to listen to.
No, don't do that.
Maybe you could get away with the last episode, but not.
I think when my
except
kid
for the
read
frozen
this,
corpses.
Maybe when she was too young.
Okay, so Gabby was way too young to read this. Mm-hmm. Gabby was telling me about reading sex scenes in this when she was like 7.
Really? No.
Yes, that's what... Listen, that's what Gabby said.
Okay.
I wasn't
there.
That's
what she remembers.
I wasn't there. Okay. We also get a nice top panel of the fighty sexy and see a few nice scenes. A guy getting choked with a chain while sexing. Two naked folks making out while one has a knife behind their back. And people fighting with swords in their underwear.
There you go.
Yeah. I feel like this is a bad strategy. Like, it would be real easy for a lot of her terrorist people to kill each other accidentally.
Presumably that's part of the gig.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a fun cadre scene, so I won't overanalyze, yeah, I mean, but...
Doesn't stand up to much analysis.
Why can't this future Russia comic be realistic?
We don't want it to be realistic.
I know, of course not. Just then, Lulu appears.
There she is.
She always makes such an entrance. Mm-hmm. Talking about the first sabbat that she took Dante to in Venice when they were so innocent. And Dante counters, they were never innocent. And Lulu agrees and unleashes a horde of her monsters at him.
There you go.
Then we have a nice little exchange with Elena, who sarcastically thanks Dante for breaking her out of prison because all this violent freedom is so much nicer.
Send me back to Siberia. I've had enough of this shit.
Elena's been pretty silent since she reunited with Dante, and I'm hoping we get some more with her soon. She's more just sass. Kind of been like silent walking around, and I miss
her. More Elena sass, please.
Yeah, this made me miss her. So Dante asks Lulu to call the demons off and then shoots her with a huntsman when she laughs at him. Another non-lethal huntsman's shot, right? Just grazes the side of her face, which Dante says was intentional and he could have killed her if he wanted to. So there's your
setup. He's acquired some control over
for non-lethal huntsman. Yeah. He tells her about the Tsar's blockade around the city and warns her it's over. And then throws in that Jocasta sends her regards, and we get a nice little moment with Lulu where she becomes quite childlike, asking after her mother.
You've seen my mother?
Yeah, that was an amazing little shot of Lulu there.
It implies there's some kind of maternal mother-daughter bond.
There's something in there. Yeah, that was really interesting. Hmm. I like that. And then Dante relays that Jocasta's disappointed in Lulu, and Lulu quickly snaps back into evil shape, saying she's disappointed in her nun-like mother locked away and praying for forgiveness. And honestly, me too. Like, Jocasta, what's going on?
I mean, we assume that's what's happening.
I hope she's plotting. No. Because just her being like, oh, forgive me, is just boring for her.
It's lame.
So Dante offers Lulu a chance to not die at the hands of the Tsar, but Lulu will need to trust him, which makes Lulu laugh hard. Mm-hmm. But then we cut, before he can explain any further, to the ramparts of the Edinburgh Castle, where, is that what it's called, the Edinburgh Castle?
Edinburgh Castle, right?
I wanted to make sure I wasn't messing that up. Where the Lord Protector commands the troops to close in on Lulu, and the Raven Corps hesitate, as they haven't heard from Captain Dante. So I guess he retained his rank.
I guess so.
We cut back to Dante and Lulu, and Dante has just finished offering her something that we don't hear.
Yeah.
But which she calls an interesting proposition, and she says she's tempted. But then what happens?
Then something explodes.
The Raven Corps blasts down the walls of the dungeons.
Explosion, where the Raven Corps comes in.
Yeah, where the fighty sexy's happening. Yeah. Ruining a perfectly good murder orgy.
Yes.
And Lulu turns away from Dante, saying that she almost believed him. Clearly this was BS. Mm-hmm. And Dante begs her to listen to him. I promise I didn't give the attack order. Mm-hmm. And then in a swift movement, Lulu turns around, grabs the huntsman, and punches Dante in the chin with it.
As you should do.
With
a long gun like that. That makes a lot of sense.
I love this move.
Yep.
It's so good. Why has no one done that before? And Elena comes to defend her charge, but Lulu just like sidekicks her away. I didn't know Lulu was so tough in hand-to-hand combat.
Apparently she is.
Have we seen Lulu do this before? I feel like no.
I don't think we've seen Lulu having to do any of this
damn.
Before.
Damn. She's really like...
Yeah.
Damn. Okay.
She's trained. They're all trained.
Clearly. I mean, Elena's no slouch.
Nope.
I mean, Dante's an idiot, but...
Especially if she's charging with two swords.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like... holding one of the swords there. She grabbed one of the swords out of Elena's hand.
Yeah, that's right, she did.
And then kicked.
She put her hand on the blade, for crying out loud.
I guess you can do that if you're a cyborganic.
I guess it like heals augmented. Up again, probably her crest heals her hand up.
Or she just doesn't care.
Either would work. Mm-hmm. So the Raven Corps pour in and announce that they are giving no quarter, and Lulu agrees, ordering her terror agents to stop screwing and switch to fighting and killing all the troops. Mm-hmm. I love that the cadre terror agents all have clothes on now. Did they quickly get dressed?
Maybe.
Like, I'd love to see them.
Maybe there's other ones.
Well, okay, fair. Ones. Like, different clothed ones that were just, like, hanging around that we didn't see. Maybe, but I would love to see them do this fight nude, because I feel like it would totally throw the Raven Corps off.
Wait, what?
You know?
I don't know. Distracting.
Dante pursues Lulu, who is leaving the area, and as she's leaving, she speaks one word, which is...
Hellfire.
I don't know if she says it like that, but I dig it. And the whole place explodes.
Yeah.
And Elena dives to push Dante away from the blast. So apparently Lulu planted cyber organic explosives through the entire Edinburgh base, trained to explode on her command.
It's a national monument she just desecrated.
Just totally desecrated. So apparently Lulu's tunnel network was extensive, and it gives her the option of sort of like popping up from a multiple places, including a drain on the ramparts right behind the Lord Protector. And they engage. And then we cut to Dante, who is checking the vitals of Elena before going off to pursue Lulu. He sees that Elena's stable and runs after Lulu, telling the Crest to radio a Strike Hawk to like meet him at the nearest exit. So he's trying to catch up.
Yep.
We cut back to Lulu v. Lord Protector, and he blasts her demons and grabs her by the throat and lifts her off of the ground. And she pulls a Nastasia, was that it? Vomits the demons right into his helmet.
Oh, it's not Nastasia.
What's her name?
Nastasia was the one who vomited poison.
That's what I'm saying. It reminded me of her. She used to like vomit things at people.
This is like demon things.
Yeah, I know they're demon things. I'm just saying it's kind of a Nastasia move.
Oh, okay.
She's threatened and she vomits on someone.
Who remembers Nastasia? How long ago was that?
I remember Nastasia. I liked Nastasia. She was weird. She was like she was like, what if Paris Hilton spit acid or something? I don't know. She was like a weird...
More Busy Phillips, but yes.
Oh, you think?
Definitely.
It's like the debutante sort of heiress thing. Mm. She had that vibe going on. Also, I love this shot of the Lord Protector hoisting Lulu up by her throat. The close-up shot of Lulu's face and her hair blown in the wind. Beautiful panel, Simon. Very well done.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that. Defiant Lulu face. Just wonderful. The little buggers actually managed to break through the Lord Protector's helmet.
Yeah.
The little creatures, Lulu creatures, which is impressive. Even the Lord Protector looks stunned by this. And he blasts them away, though, and looks up to see Lulu has taken the time to flee in a stolen Strike Hawk.
Some sort of skimmer thing.
And Protector radios to the Strike Hawks to shoot her down.
Yes.
And Lulu blasts through a landmark. What is that?
That's the monument on top of Carlton Hill. It's the Dougal something monument. I forget what it is. So monument.
Lulu totally busts it open.
Yeah.
Or one of the Strike Hawks bust it trying to catch Lulu. Yeah. But it looks like she sideswiped. I don't know. They're both responsible.
She gets very close to it.
They're both responsible.
It's wanton destruction.
Wanton destruction. Dante closes in behind in his little ship and sees Lulu's ship take a bad hit.
Yeah, and it lands on the approach to the George...
The fourth rail bridge. Yeah, the fourth bridge. I looked that up, what bridge that was. I got it right.
Victorian masterpiece of engineering.
And she staggers from the wreckage, and the Strike Hawks circle her, ordering her to surrender or die. And she brings them down with her projectile demons.
She gives them a third option.
That's amazing.
Why don't you die?
You'll die instead. And then it's just her and Dante facing off on the bridge in the rain.
In the rain. As we do.
Atmosphere.
That's what we do with Lulu and Dante's
confrontations
are all rain-based.
Rain. Dante has a lot of rain confrontations, actually. So then they have a cryptic conversation, which I'm going to draw attention to. Still think you can get me out of this, little brother, says Lulu. There's only one way now, says Dante, and then he stabs her in the chest.
Well, I don't know if she's that. I think she runs onto his blade.
You think she runs onto it?
She's running forward. She does on the blade.
Well, you would know. You're the artist.
Yeah.
And she says, with an awful shot of her, like, starting to spit out blood and crying or rain in her face, both. Trust. Whose side are you on, Nikolai? And he says, I don't know, not yours, and not the Tsar's. And then she says, then I'll see you in hell, little brother, with sort of like a smile and a like starting to like pass out.
Yeah.
And Dante pulls her to him and kisses her head.
Yes.
So I feel like something is going on here.
Okay.
Especially because we didn't hear Dante's proposal to her. Okay. And because afterward, after this whole scene happens, the Lord Protector is like, it'd be better if we had her body. And you know, if there's no body, no death.
Yeah.
Because he basically just like lets her fall, right? After the right. stabbing, he lets her fall and she falls into the sort of darkness where the bridge has been blasted out.
Yep.
To the waters below. So... something's going on here. There's some little plan happening here. I don't think Lulu's dead, and
okay.
and something's happening. That's I'm calling it now.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so but anyway, this is a big scene.
It's a big scene.
How did it feel to draw like a possible Lulu death?
It was very enjoyable to draw Edinburgh because the city I knew very well because I lived there for 9 years. And did I start Dante in Edinburgh? Just at the end of my time in Edinburgh, yes. I started Dante. So yeah, it was definitely fun times to draw Edinburgh. I think Robbie asked me, he's like, where do you want to set this? I went, well, Edinburgh would be easiest.
Yeah.
And of course, it looks great. And it's a fitting scene for something, for Gothic Lulu.
It's very true. It's a really good location for her.
So yeah.
And the Lord Protector says his line about how they should have kept the body, but he commends Dante's ruthlessness and says, remind me to never turn my back on you. Mm-hmm. Now he says this with his mask cracked and his eye visible.
Yes.
I feel like this is a huge giveaway.
Yes.
I feel like he's tempting Dante, like, figure it out.
Well, Dante looks at him like, huh?
He looks at him mad. He looks mad.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like surprised or like curious. He looks mad. So I'm guessing Dante still doesn't know, maybe? We don't know.
Maybe.
It's wordless.
Maybe he's starting to work it out. I don't know.
Perhaps. He's putting two and two together.
Anyway.
So there we go.
It's a big that is doomy, gloomy conclusion.
Hellfire. That was a really tough one.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was a grind for me.
Was it?
Yeah.
Like that one?
It's not that I didn't like it. It's just it did what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to be sad and painful and awful.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't write those scenes. Robbie's not writing those scenes so that we have, like, a good time. He's writing it because the stakes, they are raised.
Mm-hmm.
And awful things are happening.
They are.
I don't know where we're going after this.
Places.
We're going places.
I'm not allowed to tell you.
No,
you
told me I can't know. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to know.
We're getting there quick, though.
We are getting there quick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That is it. So remember, folks, we are going to be at Lawless Comic Con in Bristol on May 25th and 26th at the Doubletree Hilton. Tickets are still available. Go to lawlesscomiccon.co.uk. And we will be recording a live podcast episode at the con. We will be attempting to do this. We will attempt to do this. So please come down and see us. We don't know which day our podcast panel will be happening, but we will keep you posted. Come and party with us at the 10th anniversary of Lawless. We cannot wait to meet you. I know some of you have said you are already coming, and I'm very, very excited about that.
I'm so excited.
Oh, and so I forget who it was. It might have been Andy. Asked me if you would sign things, and I was like, Simon will sign whatever you want Simon to sign. Like, come and say hi, and we will sign anything. Simon will sign anything.
Artificial limbs, baby's heads, whatever you want.
Shins. good shin autograph. So we are closing the book on Dante for today. But we will be back next time with The Beast of Rudenstein and The Dissenter.
The Dissenter.
It's like a one-shot Dissenter. Yeah, okay. It's a 1-6-pager. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. And if so, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can. They really help. And tell your friends to join our book club and read along with us. Follow us on Instagram at podtgdr. Let us know what you think of the podcast, of Dante, comics, whatever is on your mind. We're also on Facebook. Facebook, The Great Dante Read-Through Community.
Also, remember, apparently Google Podcasts has ceased to exist. So,
oh, yeah.
That has now moved over onto Google. What's it called? Google Play or something?
Okay.
Let me check. I've got this all listed. You can put it as part of your favorites on Google Music app.
Oh, really? That's Google, what's happening is they're combining
YouTube,
it into...
YouTube Music.
YouTube Music has... Yeah. Google... Wait. Google Podcasts has become YouTube Music?
Well, it was YouTube Music always existed, but now it's got extra functionality. You can now
that is podcasts. Somehow related to Google Podcasts?
Well, the Google Podcast app, which is where I was keeping all my podcasts, has now ceased to exist.
Yes, I know that.
So now you can do all that functionality in the YouTube Music app.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
All right then.
If you were confused.
Okay.
Which I was.
I think briefly. I'm still confused, but anyway. I'm sure our listeners will know what you're
They're
talking
all
about.
Smart people.
They're all smart people. Well, let us know what you think of the podcast. Reach out through any of those channels. We love to hear from you. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.